This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
It's a holiday week ahead of Thanksgiving, and we've got some special programming for you guys coming up on Thanksgiving Day. It'll be fun. We've also got a special Wednesday edition of The Huddle. But first, on today's Jake and Stacy, we're going to keep our preview going for the Seahawks' upcoming game against the Philadelphia Eagles. Here's my question for you guys. The Seahawks sweep the next four games if blank. Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line 710-710 to join that conversation. I'll be keeping an eye on that. Now, here's my first one. The Seahawks sweep the next four games if the Seahawks defense continues to hold each other accountable. Now, I go back to that meeting that KJ Wright talked about. He joined Groz and Wyman the other day and talked about kind of like a come-to-Jesus moment that the Seahawks defense had. They'd been struggling mightily through many weeks. We're giving up the most passing yards of any defense in NFL history. And finally, they just all got together. KJ Wright, 10-year NFL veteran, had never done anything like this. They all got together as part of a meeting and talked to each other about each person's assignment. KJ Wright said, you know, I know what I had to do, but I wasn't sure what Puna Ford was doing. Puna Ford may not know what DJ Reed is responsible for. We've got new guys, new faces, and not only that, but we need to know what everyone else is accountable for. So they had this meeting. Lo and behold, they come out against the Arizona Cardinals Thursday night with their best defensive performance by far. Jake, one thing that I said as far as the Seahawks sweep the next four games if blank was the Seahawks defense continues to hold each other accountable. That's my number one pick. How about you?
I like that a lot because, look, when you talk about accountability, Stacy, you know, some people may look at that and go, well, of course they need to hold each other accountable. But there was something that happened this last week that hasn't happened before. And I'm not sure why it had to wait till week 11, Stacy, for it to happen. But whatever the case may be, it finally happened where you have a group of guys and coaches that are looking at each other and saying, hey, we need to know that you know. We can't just assume that you know that I know that I know. We need to know for sure that you know your job and that you can stand up in front of the group and tell us what your job is verbatim on every single call. And for whatever reason, that was the moment that they needed to really gain that trust and to really start gelling together. And I am hoping, Stacy, that that level of accountability, them holding each other to that, will continue to pay off for them as they go down these next 4 weeks. As you know, I think these 4 weeks are vital for them to build a championship team and a championship level defense, and we'll see if they'll be able to do that. So I love that. For me personally, what I think the Seahawks sweep the next four games if, and I think they run the table if, Carlos Hyde and Chris Carson stay healthy. I mean, how badly have you missed hearing this? Let's go to cut number one here. Chris Carson, 29-yard touchdown run.
The handoff to Carson starts right. Back up the middle. Pound through one. Through two. He's going to score. Touchdown, Seahawks. Chris Carson just runs over half of the Minnesota defense. The Seahawks have scored three touchdowns in the blink of an eye to start this second half. And Carson says, give me the ball. I'm going to run them all over.
It's a great call.
Raves, bringing the fire. I love it. It gives me goosebumps all over again. For me, having Chris Carson back in the lineup, having Carlos Hyde, having both of those guys healthy through that four-game stretch and through the remainder of the season will allow this offense to be in its former glory. It's not too far removed, Stacy. It's still one of the best offenses in the NFL, but it was the number one offense in the league for a reason. Yes, Russ was cooking. He was playing at a great level, but I had a chance to talk to Brock Huard earlier today as we were kind of prepping our, you know, Thanksgiving specials. We all, you know, do that for Thursday, Friday during the Thanksgiving holiday week and get together and have mashup conversations. It's a lot of fun. And had a conversation with Brock and, you know, just kind of talking through Let Russ Cook and everything that I view it as and what he has seen in his experience watching Peyton Manning kind of do the same thing. It's more about letting Russ control. And when Russ has all of the ingredients to make whatever he needs to make, in the moment or for the particular game, that's when he is in control. That's when he's dictating to defenses what they are going to be and staying one step ahead. And so to me, Carlos Hyde and Chris Carson being healthy and being a part of this lineup allows that offense to continue to stay one step ahead at all times.
Yeah, and that's so hugely important, Jake, as they move into the colder temperatures. I always give Mike Salk a hard time when he talks about the importance of the run game, not because I don't also think it's important, but because he is for a much more balanced offense as far as run pass. And, you know, God love him, but I want to see Russ cook. I want to see him throw it downfield. I want to see those moments. I'm fine with the dink and dunk passing offense. I'm fine with that. But that said, we have seen a difference in this offense without Chris Carson, without Carlos Hyde. I completely agree with that pick. And Jake, not only that, Chris Carson, and this isn't as a slight to Carlos Hyde, is even better than Carlos Hyde. And seeing Carlos Hyde out there was a completely different thing than seeing the guys that they'd had. You know what I mean? Like, you just saw a guy that looks like a 1,000-yard rusher. Running backs that are those 1,000-yard running backs that are physical, like a Pete Carroll running back, look different when they play. And you saw that different kind of ball game on Thursday against the Arizona Cardinals. Okay. I also have another one. I'm going to loop you guys all in, though. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Michael Schutz.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. But I just want to say one more thing. When it comes to Chris Carson and those guys playing downhill, you see the difference. But if you listen back to that cut, you can hear it in the sound of just the play-by-play of Chris Carson and his pads hitting the defenders and bouncing off of them. They play with a different level of physicality.
Yeah.
The handoff to Carson starts right. Back up the middle. Pounds through one. Through two. He's going to score. Touchdown, Seahawks. Chris Carson just runs over half of the Minnesota defense. The Seahawks have scored three touchdowns in the blink of an eye to start this second half. And Carson says, give me the ball. I'm going to run them all over.
I miss that, Jake. I miss that a lot.
I miss it, too.
All right. You know what?
Can't wait to have it back.
I'm staying on offense for mine. Now, my first one was the Seahawks sweep the next four games if the Seahawks defense continues to hold each other accountable. As a reminder to you all, Viziard Seltzer text line 710-710. The Seahawks sweep the next four games if blank. Mine? Russell Wilson back to MVP form. Do I think Russell Wilson is going to need to play at an MVP level for them to beat these teams? No. These are struggling offenses. I mean, it starts with this game against Carson Wentz and the Philadelphia Eagles. Carson Wentz feels like a shell of what he once was, and we'll get into that with our own Eagles preview coming up a bit later in the show. They still have weapons. There's still potential there, but they have not been anywhere near the kind of offense that they have in years past. And so does Russell Wilson need to play like an MVP when the defense can handle this offense so well? No, I don't think so, but I want to see it, Jake. I want to feel like if this defense can't stay consistent, Russell Wilson still very much looks like the Russell Wilson of weeks 1 through 6.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, and that's a great point in terms of Russell, you know, continuing to play well, but getting back to that MVP form. For him, it's yes, taking care of the football, and he was able to do that and get himself right this last week against the Arizona Cardinals. But it's going out there and playing with an aggressive nature, going out there and trusting your instincts and going out there, you know, tucking the ball when the opportunity presents itself, you know, taking deep shots down the field with Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. This is an offense led by Russell Wilson that can be extremely dynamic. And if Russell Wilson can get back to that MVP form over the next 4 weeks and down the stretch, gosh, this is going to be really, really fun football to watch, and it's going to be exciting. So, and guess what, Stacey? I fully anticipate that that is going to be the case.
Well, it better, because now I'm holding you accountable if it isn't. The second Russell Wilson has a game without five touchdowns, I'm turning to you and I'm saying, what happened?
Is four okay? Is four acceptable?
Four is acceptable.
Is that all right?
It's meet standards.
Okay. All right. It's borderline, though. Okay. All right. Understood. The other thing that I had on here for the Seahawks to sweep the next four games is somebody who has come in and has exceeded expectations. Someone who I knew that would make a contribution to this team, and I knew that he would be a positive for this team, but he has exceeded just being a positive. He's been an impact player, major impact player, and that is Carlos Dunlap. If Carlos Dunlap continues to play with that same level of impact and contribution, he will make this front seven great. And what I have seen, Stacey, with Carlos Dunlap is not his own individual abilities to hit the quarterback, affect the quarterback, sack the quarterback, and make tackles for loss and chase down sideline to sideline screenplays. But what I've seen from Carlos Dunlap is freeing everybody else up. You saw Jaron Reed all of a sudden have this flexibility. He's playing at defensive end and defensive tackle. Puna Ford's being moved around all across the front. I think it just makes this group better as a unit. And guess what? They're not done adding to this group, and I want to put a little birdie out there for everybody. I don't mean to put pressure on this one player, but a little birdie out there is telling me that as you're looking for another boost, Daryl Taylor, I know that everybody's like, oh, what are you talking about? You know, he's been injured. How could we trust this guy? You know, this, that, and the other. But Daryl Taylor is going to be an impact player. That's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that Daryl Taylor has got a real chance to come in after all the injuries and to be a player that maybe isn't generating a ton of sacks for you right out of the gate, but he is going to be a lightning rod. And he is going to be somebody that can definitely generate pressure and will bring some more versatility and juice to that defensive line. And you add him with Benson Mayo, Carlos Dunlap, Jaron Reed, and Puna Ford, I'm excited to see what this front seven can truly be. And guess what? Also, Snacks Harrison, he did a pretty good job against the Arizona Cardinals. And one thing you can't do with Snacks Harrison is you can't move this guy. His sideline-to-sideline mobility right now, he's still getting that back. But, gosh, you cannot beat that guy at the point of attack. He is an absolute stalemate every time. And so it's really fun to kind of see this front seven, led by Carlos Dunlap at this point, really start to take a resurgence.
The Seahawks sweep the next four games. I would say run the table, but let's go with sweep the next four games if blank. I've got the Seahawks defense continues to hold each other accountable, players and staff, and have a game like they did against the Arizona Cardinals. And then, oh, a little bit of cut number five right here, if Russell Wilson gets right back to MVP form.
Play fake. Russ is going to roll to the right side. Stops, looks, steps up in the pocket. Now he's going to scramble. Now he's going to throw to the end zone. He's got a man! Touchdown! Seahawks! DK Metcalf! Play made by Russell Wilson, scrambling out of the pocket to his right side, and Metcalf comes all the way across the back of the end zone, outrunning Patrick Peterson, and the ball was absolutely perfect. The Seahawks on their opening drive go up 6-0.
That's what I want to see more of. Jake Scott, if Carlos Hyde and Chris Carson stay healthy, and another Carlos, if Carlos Dunlap continues to make the front seven great. I do want to mention, too, Curtis Rogers, producer Curtis Rogers, has two options here, too, that I think are totally legit, and I want to include those. One, that Jamal Adams stays healthy. So we already know that Carlos Dunlap has been a huge help to this front seven. Jamal Adams, has he been consistent in coverage? No, but it's hard to tell how much of that is him and how much of it is the job that he's been called on to do. He has, though, affected your pass rush. He's added to that sack total. And he's made great plays the first couple weeks. Week one, him and Bobby Wagner looked like the two best players on the field on either team. I mean, they were phenomenal. And he was injured out for a month with that groin injury. Getting back, you had his first game back against the Bills to shake off some of that rust. Looked even better against the Cardinals. I would expect him, after this kind of mini bye week they've had, to look great also against the Eagles. And in his first time out there, that'll be on the road, obviously. And Curtis also said special teams production doesn't slip. Special teams has been an incredibly underrated part of this Seahawks 2020 squad, which is honestly more impressive given that special teams coordinator Brian Schneider, Jake, had to step away from the team for personal reasons before.
Yeah,
so they lost
point.
Their coordinator
at the last
week
second
up.
At the last second of the season. Yeah,
that's absolutely right.
Yeah, that's you know, and Michael Dixon, I think, has done a really good job. He has been a weapon for them, being able to consistently put the ball land the ball at opposing offenses, you know, own 20-yard line, pinning them back, winning the field position battle. And you look at guys like Nick Ballore. You look at guys like Cody Barton. Ugo Amadi, guys who have really stood out on special teams that have made great contributions. So I absolutely agree with Curtis on that. And then you look at Jamal Adams, and I really feel like he is an emotional player, an emotional leader. And when you start to have a turning point moment like this, like you did versus the Arizona Cardinals, I feel like he's somebody that really feeds off of that. He needed that type of game, not as an individual, but he needed to feel that from the collective team. And I think that is going to be a game and a moment where you start to see this defense hopefully really gel together and start to see Jamal Adams really play his best version of his game. And I'm excited to see that happen.
Curtis, I like that special teams choice, by the way, by you. That was solid.
Yeah?
Yeah, that was a good one.
I think so. I think special teams is going to play a big role because of how close these games have been this season. You can't really afford special teams to slip any less than what they've been. And what they've been is probably the most consistent unit on the field this season. I mean, Michael Dixon, great at field position. Jason Myers hasn't missed a field goal yet. He's missed a couple extra points. But, I mean, Myers has been about as automatic as it comes. Maybe you'd like to see a little bit more out of the kick return and punt return games, but with how close these games are, Seattle can't miss out on any of these opportunities because that's missed points out on the board.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross here with you. Let's get to three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
We got news yesterday that the Rays are reportedly open to shopping starter Blake Snell. Makes a lot of sense. He's from Shorewood, big Husky fan, grew up here in the Seattle area. Do you want Jerry Dipoto and the Mariners to make a serious run at the former Cy Young winner?
Not probably what it's going to take.
Yeah.
I do not want to give up Jared Kelnick. I do not want to give up Julio Rodriguez. You know, and I guess we're going to find out if the Mariners believe that either one of those two guys are legit stars. I mean, I know at some point you're going to have to start adding pitching to this lineup and to this ball club, and you're going to have to add serious veterans. But I just don't know if they're there yet. I know that Snell is – his current contract is through 2023, so that would still put him in the window that you're really trying to win games. So I understand why there would be intrigue, especially he's a local kid. You know, he's a Seattle guy. It'd be great to bring him home and great to have that pitching talent. I just don't know if it's worth giving up the potential on having a elite all-star talent on your roster, part of your lineup. I'm just not sure if I'm there yet.
Now, this is the piece that they're missing, right? What they're missing is your premier starter in your rotation. But, and that's not a slight on anyone. It's just, let's be honest. The Mariners have been steadfast about their patience bringing up Kelnick. We all were pushing them to do it and wondering whether they would and kind of hoping they would in what felt like a throwaway season a little bit last year. And they didn't. They stuck to their guns. And it feels too late to switch that now. You've already decided that these are two guys you want for your future. You have a great core, and I don't want to be the Mets. Blake Snell is going to be fantastic no matter where he goes. I don't want to be the team that trades away a superstar and is wondering, like, what could have been. You got him right now. You won the trade. Don't give it up. Question two.
Question
number two.
I said question two, Curtis.
Okay. Well, how about you answer question two? Right. UW reportedly declined a counteroffer from BYU to play in Provo because the Huskies had to guarantee not to cancel last minute. So who's worse for the wear in this whole mess?
Jake, why don't you go first?
Oh, what? Oh, you don't want to answer the question? Weird. Weird how UW fans wanted to come after BYU like they were the ones that were scared, when in actuality, BYU just didn't want to agree to a horrible agreement.
No, they didn't want to agree to a horrible loss.
Why should BYU kowtow to UW when BYU actually has something to play for this year? UW has nothing to play for this year other than getting in games and having bragging rights about the four games or five games that they played this year. Again, it's nothing against UW. It's nothing against what the Pac-12 has had to go through. But if I'm BYU, Why am I going to let Larry Scott, of all people, dictate what happens to my season? No, thank you. And really, the person to blame here is Larry Scott. It's the Pac-12. It's not BYU. It's not UW. If it was between those two teams, they actually probably would be playing right now, because they would come to some sort of agreement. UW would guarantee the game and move forward. Do you think UW really cares that Utah would be out a game? No, they don't care. But this is what the Pac-12 is trying to do to protect its own conference. I get that. But BYU's not going to sit around and wait for them just to potentially not commit to a game that Utah is most likely not going to play Arizona State. And I think that BYU is going to end up having a better matchup for themselves anyways next week when they play Cincinnati, who is a highly ranked team right now in the rankings.
First of all, UW is undefeated.
Big whoop. They beat my Wildcats. That's
look,
nothing.
This is all, I'm being facetious, but I think that, you know, look, I was giving you a hard time for BYU ducking the dogs the other day. At the end of the day, though, this really isn't on either team. It is not UW's fault. The Pac-12 has this ridiculous agreement where if a conference game opens up, they have to bail on this non-conference opponent. I understand why UW would be hesitant to do that, because they have no choice in this matter. But let's be honest, let the record show that the dogs have dominated these past games.
Yes, they have, against the Beavers and against Arizona. And I
against
would love
BYU.
For UW. Again, I'm not. I'm rooting for UW. I've been a UW fan my entire life, so I know it's coming across like I'm not, but I am. I just don't like the hypocrisy of, you know, UW fans all of a sudden trying to act like BYU's running scared. They're not. This was just a terrible agreement that BYU was right in denying. And guess what? In terms of their overall conference, I like how UW fans are like, well, BYU needs us. No, they don't. Guess what? Are you ranked? No, you're not. Who could they play next week that would be better for their overall rankings and situation? Number 7 Cincinnati Bearcats. That's who they're most likely going to match up with next week. So that's going to be the game that they end up playing, and it'll be better for them in the long run. I'm sorry, UW. I'm sorry, Pac-12. You guys are unfortunately irrelevant to the college football conversation
wow.
this year because,
wow.
because you decided to sit
Where's
back
the lie?
And let
Where's
everybody
the lie?
Else play. I'm not lying. I'm just
Pac-12
speaking
school.
Facts. I'm sorry. I'm sorry if it hurts people's feelings.
I say that.
It makes me mad. It makes me mad about the Pac-12.
I have been so critical of the Pac-12 before and of Larry Scott. I said that this college season on their part was a hot mess express, and I stand by that. I will blindly stand by Washington in this case. But let's be real. The whole reason this is even a story is because BYU made their bed with that tweet, and now they're lying in it, and it was a bit of a social media gaffe, and I understand the argument for why they wouldn't want to do this. In all honesty,
they'll be playing the number 7
honesty,
team next week.
In all
they're not
honesty,
running from anybody. They'll
I'm
play the number 7
that.
Team next week.
Yeah, but you said any team, any place, and
including
yeah,
San Diego
but
State.
I guess they will be playing San Diego State at some point, but I guess, you know, when you have the Pac-12 who's making ridiculous demands, then it's not worth it to a team that's not ranked. It's not worth it for BYU, who is ranked currently, for a team that's not ranked. And they will make some sort of agreement with Cincinnati, who is ranked, and that's just the facts of the situation.
Question 3.
Number 3.
Because I wanted to go to question 3.
Yeah. After last night's game, are you more afraid of the Rams or less afraid of the Bucks?
I am more afraid of the Rams. And I don't like saying that. I feel weak saying that. I don't like it. I don't like myself. But I am more afraid of the Rams after watching that game. Their secondary looked great. Fuller with not just his first pick, but 2 picks on the night. I know that Tom Brady is not what he used to be, right? So this isn't like prime Tom Brady and the Patriots that you're beating. The Rams had been up and down to start the season. We knew the defense was a strength, but I think that this team is good enough to overcome mistakes by Jared Goff, and that's what's scary.
That is a scary thought there. I think, oh man. Yeah, I don't know if I'm afraid of the Rams. We know who they are. We know who they are. They're a very good team. And I think the reality is with the Rams is that you got to try and find a way to neutralize Aaron Donald. And that is an extremely difficult task because that pass rush is for real. But if you're the Seahawks, you feel a lot better going into that game with Carlos Hyde and Chris Carson a part of your lineup. I think Russell Wilson is in a better headspace when you're in that situation. And what this game told me is that I am less afraid of the Bucs. And the reason why is because Tom Brady at this stage of his career is a good quarterback who can win football games, but he can't push the ball down the field on a consistent basis, and B, I just think that there's dysfunction there between Brady, Arians, and Byron Leftwich. I just don't think they're all on the same page. And guess what? There's going to be – cue it up. Stacey, you texted it last night as soon as Brady threw that pick. Mm-hmm. Cue it up for Bruce Arians to throw Tom Brady under the bus as soon as he is on radio, either today or tomorrow. I can guarantee you that he's going to be, you know, talking about how bad Brady played, this, that, and the other. I just think there's a lot of dysfunction there.
Oh, I'm ready for it. Bruce Arians is going to get on his transition lenses and his pageboy cap, and he's going to mean business. He's going to throw Tom Brady right under that bus. If you missed the show, don't forget you can listen to it via the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group. Mike Salk joins us next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Mike Salk joining us now, brought to you by JAFCO Plumbing and Sewer. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Mike, I have a question. We were just talking about Blake Snell a bit about 5 minutes ago, and you have to answer this yes or no. You don't get to choose another player that you would potentially give up. It has to be one of these players. Would you give up Kelnick or Rodriguez for Blake Snell?
No.
Okay.
Simply stated,
why not?
No. You don't need to. I mean, first of all, let's be clear, and the Mariners won't give up either of those two guys for Blake Snell. I'm not convinced they're going to give up either of those two guys for anybody. They're as high as the rest of the world is on those two guys. The Mariners are arguably even higher on them. They love their two guys. They love a lot of their prospects, but they love these two guys. So they're not giving them up for Blake Snell. Beyond that, I don't think you have to. I mean, like, if you're the Mariners, it's too early to make a deal like this. That's not to say that you wouldn't like to get him, and you'll certainly have a conversation. And if you could get Blake Snell without having to give much up, certainly, of course, you'll have that conversation. He's a local guy, and you got him for 3 years. You should be really good and competitive in 2 years, right? The hope is the Mariners are fun and interesting in 21 and, like, legit contenders in 22. And at that point, Snell would be 29, still in his prime, with another year left after that. So, like, I understand where the conversation comes, but there is a phrase, and Brock and I talked about this in the podcast, which will come out tonight, brockandsalkpodcast.com, that the Mariners have written in their front office, and I think it's an important one. It's very telling. It says, discipline is the shortcut. Discipline is the shortcut. And if you kind of, like, think through the phrase a little bit, it means you can't just decide, well, hold on, Blake Snell's available, go! Like, no, you've got to stay true to your plan. Stay disciplined. The shortest way to get to where you want to be, which is in legitimate World Series contention year after year, is by sticking to your plan and staying disciplined and giving up Kelnick or Rodriguez or anything like that to bring in a player like Snell. It's just too early, and it breaks with the plan. They don't need to do it, and they won't do it.
Well, and it just doesn't seem that Blake Snell, I know there's the ties, I know, you know, his performance in the World Series, all of that, but I don't necessarily see the draw to that Blake Snell is the guy mm-hmm. that you've got to go do this for, right? Am I wrong in that?
Well, it's not that it's him. I think he gets a little extra bump because of the local thing. You know how Seattle fans are. Like, they still want Jake Locker to play quarterback
suckers.
For the Seahawks, right?
We're suckers for it.
Right. I
yes.
mean, like, oh, Jake
we're
Locker's suckers. Available? He's so nice. He should play quarterback here. Nothing would be better. Like, there's an element
Careful.
Of that. But also, I mean, Jake Locker's terrible. But the element of having somebody that would care about the Mariners and want to stay here, I think that there is something to that with Blake Snell. But here's how I view it, Jake. In the next year or two, they're going to need a big-time pitcher. They're going to need to add premier pitching. The question is whether or not you need to give up that level of prospect to get it and whether now's the time. And I think the answer to both questions is no. If you look at what the Cubs did with John Lester, he was the last piece and they just paid money for him. If you look at what the Astros did with first Verlander and then Gerrit Cole, they got them once they were already in contention and already had turned the corner, and then they gave up mid-level prospects for those guys and paid them. It wasn't about the very top guy. They didn't give up Carlos Correa. right? They didn't give up Springer. They gave up the next level of prospect below that, which is not equivalent to your Kelnick and Rodriguez. It would be sort of your mid-level guys. So in another year or so, could you give up Taylor Trammell for a yeah, maybe. Sure. If that's what it takes in order to bring in your version of Cole or Verlander, yeah, absolutely. And you add that to some of the young pitchers, Logan Gilbert, et cetera, that you have in your system, Hancock, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's how this works. So you're going to need premier pitching. You just don't necessarily need it today.
How do you get it in the future?
Buy it. I would prefer them to buy it.
Rather than trade.
Yeah, I think that you got to develop some of it, and you saw how important that was for the Dodgers this year in winning the World Series, how important it was for the Astros during their run. You got to develop it, so that means you got to hit on a couple of your guys, whether it's Gilbert or Hancock or you got a few others in there, Sam Carlson. I mean, like, there's three or four guys that, okay, if you can hit on two of them in addition to Sheffield, and maybe you've got a, you know, you that sort of Taiwan Walker who comes back to be your fourth or fifth starter, and then you go out and buy your one guy, your version of John Lester, your version of Justin Verlander, and you're probably going to have to add one premier bat at some point, right? Maybe that's going to be Francisco Lindor. Maybe it's going to be Corey Seager. I don't know who the name is yet. It's up to them to kind of figure out the details. But if you can add and just spend the money on those two things, in addition to what you're growing at home, I think that you have a really, really good chance to be an excellent team in 2 years.
And that's an exciting prospect here, Salk.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, when I look and think about this team, you know, I remember the conversations we had when we were first talking about tearing this whole thing down. And people are like, no, you're so close. And, you know, during that process. And now to be here 2 years removed from that situation, I feel very positive about what Jerry DePoto and this crew has done in terms of building, you know, back up their farm system, building back up the young talent of their roster. I mean, they have to be given credit where credit is due here. And now it's their job to finish it and put this whole thing together.
And probably not an accident that you're starting to see some of the names associated with this rebuild being interviewed for jobs around the country. Right. Justin Hollander, who is their assistant GM, just was one of the last two finalists for the Anaheim job. And that is telling that teams around the country or around the league are looking at what the Mariners are doing and saying, OK, who else was responsible for fixing this farm system? Jeff Kingston, who was here for he was the assistant GM before Justin Hollander, we're hearing now is a finalist for the Philly job after being considered in Anaheim as well. The fact that those names are back in the fold for the Mariners, it stinks that you might lose some of the guys that have really helped make your team what it is, but it's telling that the rest of the league is valuing what you're doing.
He is Mike Salk. You can hear him every weekday right here on Jake and Stacey at 12:30 p.m. Plus on the Brock and Salk podcast. New episode drops tonight.
Tonight, yes. 11:30 though. We're 11:30 now.
That's so late.
No, 11:30 with you.
Oh, 11:30.
You're
thinking
Mountain
Time. You're right. Okay.
We're 12:30 Mountain Time.
I thought
every
your
day.
Podcast. You were saying it. Podcast dropped at 11:30, and I was like, who do you think you are? Like a
Brock,
new release
well,
for an album?
Brock started cursing, so we have to go late night.
Super
There's
late.
A lot
it's
of
the
like
PG-13. Yeah.
Brock started
sense.
Making a lot of real sexual comment. You're like, Brock, this is going to have to go late night. Right?
Oh, yeah.
So, late night with Brock and Salk.
Totally get it. thanks, Mike. All right. We were talking about whether you're more afraid of the Rams or less afraid of the Bucks, and that brought us to another conversation. Who is the NFL's most deceiving playoff team right now? That's next on Jake and Stacey.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost here with you. You know, I'm assuming that all of you guys watch Monday Night Football. Bucks loss to the Rams. Jared Goff, weirdly enough, looking like the better quarterback last night. Who'd have thought? Yes, Tom Brady's 43 years old, but that wasn't great for Seahawks because the Rams have since leapfrogged Seattle in the NFC standings, which brought me, you guys, to a question, well, I guess all of us, to the question about the NFL's most deceiving playoff team, because I watched this game and felt a little more nervous about the Rams. Jake, though, you watched it and felt less worried about the Bucks.
Yeah, I really did. I think that when you look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they've got all the talent in the world, but I just don't think that overall Tom Brady has the stuff on a consistent basis to be able to get it done like he used to. And it doesn't seem like Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich and Tom Brady are in sync in terms of what makes Brady Brady. And, you know, Bruce Arians, risk it, you don't get the biscuit if you don't risk it mentality is not jiving with Tom Brady because – he's not pushing the ball down the field very well. And I think that that's something that you have to keep an eye on as you move forward. And also this defense, it's too much feast or famine. They've got dudes. I mean, they're two linebackers, Lavonte David, Devin White, Jason Pierre-Paul, and their front is a really solid front, but it's just too much feast or famine with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I think that that is really a dangerous combination when it comes to playing good, consistent football teams as you are going to face in the playoffs.
All right, so let me give you guys just a picture of what the playoffs look like right now. We'll stay to the NFC first. You've got the number one seeded New Orleans Saints. They're 8-2, but they're without Drew Brees for the time being. He has 11 broken ribs. That number just keeps increasing. You've got the Rams, number two, Packers, three, Eagles, four. We'll just keep them out of this conversation. The Seahawks at five, the Buccaneers at six, and the Arizona Cardinals at seven. When you're looking at this playoff picture, again, I'm not including the NFC East. They're kind of like that friend where someone canceled and you just need to bring someone. So you're like, I don't even care who you bring, just bring them. And it's the Eagles. And we're like, all right, fine. But for the sake of the conversation, we're looking at serious contenders here. Saints, Rams, Packers, Seahawks, Buccaneers, Cardinals. Honestly, when I look at the full playoff picture, whether it's in the NFC, Jake, or league-wide, I think all of these teams are pretty legit. It's been a really weird year for sports, but I don't think that that's lent itself to having weird teams in the playoff picture outside of the NFC East. Like, I'm not fully confident in the Seahawks' chances versus any of these teams. Do I think that they can hang with them? For sure. But, I mean, the Rams looked legit last night. They made me a little bit nervous. Right now, the Seahawks could be
Goff
facing...
threw two picks.
Yeah,
Goff
but
threw
the,
two
here's
picks
the thing.
That should have cost them.
But I stand by what I said. With the Rams team is good enough to overcome his mistakes, the Seahawks, until the Arizona Cardinals game, were not good enough to overcome mistakes by Russell Wilson. That's the difference.
Yeah, that's a good point. You do have to credit the Rams' defense in terms of the ability to stop the Bucs and Tom Brady and to overcome some of the mistakes that Jared Goff made, no question. But it just seemed like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were very disconnected at times. There were times where they looked great and they looked every bit of the hype that they had coming into the season, and then there were other times where they were extremely disconnected. And it wasn't just what the Rams were doing, it was what Tampa Bay was doing. It was what Tom Brady was doing out on the field that made me lead to that. And one of the other things that I was shocked, and I was texting you guys during the game, was I couldn't believe that Tampa Bay was so willing to drop back in zone coverage and not try and generate pressure on Jared Goff. Mm-hmm. And when they were able to confuse him or get any semblance of pressure, Goff struggled. He turned the ball over and did some different things. So I thought that their game plan as a whole was a little bit head-scratching as well.
So who's the most deceiving team in the NFL playoff picture right now? Jake, you say the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You're not buying into the hype. You'd think that they are a beatable team. I think people outside of Seattle would point to the Seahawks because of their defense, despite this last outing where they were great. And I'd say the second half of the Rams where they improved. But I think that people outside of Seattle might also point to the Seahawks. What do we think about the Arizona Cardinals?
I think the Arizona Cardinals are fraudulent this year. I don't think that they're a legit playoff contender. You know, I look at some of these games. Look at, the Seahawks. Again, they won the first time around, but I felt like that had more to do with the Seahawks losing the game than the Arizona Cardinals necessarily winning the game. I thought the Seahawks blew that game first time around. And then the Arizona Cardinals, it took a Hail Mary, an amazing Hail Mary, for them to beat the Buffalo Bills. And now you're looking at a totally different season for the Arizona Cardinals at this point in time. I mean, you could do that with a lot of different teams, but I think the Arizona Cardinals are a good team. They're a team that you should be... They are dangerous, and you got to show up for, no question about that. But I don't know if they're a team that necessarily scares me. But one team that I think is a little bit, it smells fraudulent to me is I think the Indianapolis Colts on the other side of it with the AFC. I think that they're a little bit fraudulent. They have an amazing defense. They have an absolute amazing defense, but I just think that Phillip Rivers at this stage in his career isn't necessarily the quarterback that's going to get them over the hump. I mean, they nearly gave that game away to the Green Bay Packers. I mean, Green Bay had zero business in taking that game into overtime, but they were able to because of the way that offense just completely shut itself down, all the holding penalties and the lack thereof of being able to, you know, convert and not trust Phillip Rivers in that situation to get it done as well.
I got to look at, let me read through the AFC ones in case anyone wants to participate too. You got the number one Steelers, the only undefeated team left in the NFL at 10-0. You've got 2 Chiefs, 3 Bills, 4 Colts, 5 Titans, 6 Browns, 7 Raiders. I don't know if it's just the Raiders' last two games against the Chiefs. There's one win, one loss, but it was a close one that Patrick Mahomes won in the final couple seconds there thanks to a breakdown in coverage on defense. I think the Raiders are a more dangerous team than the Browns. The Browns, I think they don't have one of their best weapons anymore. Odell Beckham Jr., it seems like that wide receiver group finally started to look really, really solid with Mayfield. They lost him. Myles Garrett, obviously still fantastic. The defense still has its pieces. But, I mean, they've also got some pretty ugly wins. They've got a win against the Houston Texans, scored 10 points to 7. I mean, it's... They've had some dominant wins, but I think that they've fallen off just a little bit. They're 3-4, but they haven't been putting up the points they were in the first half of the season. So if I have to pick one, it's going to be the Browns because the Colts defense has remained pretty legit throughout the course of the season.
Well, we just picked 2 AFC teams. The Seahawks aren't going to have to worry about either one of those teams, right?
That's
at
true.
This point in time. The 2 teams in my mind that you got to worry about are the Green Bay Packers and the New Orleans Saints. And, you know, which of those 2 teams do they have any chance of being deceiving? Any chance of being, you know, a team that is more of a paper tiger than anything else? I mean, that's the real question here, right?
I think
as you look
Packers.
At those 2 teams.
Yeah, the Packers have had some close games that they could have easily lost.
Why do you think it's the Packers? Well, if you look at their losses, they've lost to the Vikings at home. They blew a late lead to the Colts. I believe they got blown out by the Bucks, who are clearly not as good as everybody thought they were going to be. I mean, those 3 losses aren't really to the best teams here. You look at their schedule, their only good win was against New Orleans, and that was when New Orleans, I think, was at their most dysfunctional with Michael Thomas getting in fights with everybody. So what have the Packers done between last year when they were very fraudulent and this year? Have they improved themselves at all from year to year? I don't think they have. That's why I think I would put the Packers in that fraudulent case.
Yeah, it feels also like the Saints are just getting better and better. There's a 38-3 win over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 27-13 over the 49ers. I know the 49ers are a mess, but still, you've got 24-9 over the Falcons, a much more dominant game than Seattle had. I mean, I think that the only thing that would make me hesitate about the Saints would be that Drew Brees is out, but that didn't affect them last year, and it certainly doesn't look like it's affecting them too much this year. I'd say the Packers would probably be the one that you'd have, you know, the best chance of. But I got to be honest, Jake, of these teams, and we're up against the clock here, but of these teams, I think it's recency bias, but the Rams do make me nervous. They do make me nervous. Well, they have the weakest quarterback, but they make me the most nervous.
They should. They match up to your team the best, the absolute best. And I think to Curtis's point, it's a great point that I do think the Packers are probably the most fraudulent team out there as of right now. They've got ways that they can hurt you and beat you, and clearly Aaron Rodgers still has the it factor. But I think that this is a team that is definitely a group that I could easily see take a first-round loss or a second-round loss when given the opportunity. And so the Seahawks just got to keep winning. If they can get that number one seed, and the Saints are going to have to face the Chiefs here down the stretch, and they drop that game, I mean, this could work out pretty well for the Seahawks.
As a reminder, this hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up next, we've got a Wednesday edition of The Huddle tomorrow, which will be a nice preview, but we're going to get you guys started early with our Eagles preview. That's next.